Okay, let's start with our last speaker, Rod Libby from the Case Western Surf University. You're welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you for coming. I want to thank the ISB organizers and in particular the reviewers for the papers for selecting our work for presentation here. The title is up at the top, and this work was published earlier this year in PLOS Computational Biology, and the site is there at the bottom. As I was traveling to the conference this week, I happened to pick up a copy of the USA Today news magazine, and on the cover story said, "The genome, big advances and many questions." And I started reading this with great interest, and about halfway through, we were reminded why studying in a translational science setting, why studying so many diseases is difficult, and that is because they are polygenic. But most interesting is right after that quote in the paper, or that paragraph in the paper, there was a quote by Dr. David Goldstein at Duke, and he said, with respect to the difficulty of finding candidate disease genes, he said it's like knowing a suspect is in the neighborhood but not knowing what house the culprit is in. And I thought that could be suitably rephrased as saying that we have no chance of finding what house the culprit is in if we're not in the right neighborhood. So that's what I'm going to share with you today. It's a nice segue. I'm going to share with you today how a proteomics-driven approach can find candidate subnetworks in disease so we can find out what culprits are involved in disease. So by way of overview, I'm briefly going to share with you some background approaches for protein-protein interaction network-based models. I'll share with you then our proteomic approach with a brief discussion of our computational model, some results from implementing that model on data obtained in our lab and one other, some wet bench validation, comparison to a genomic-driven approach, that is using genes to drive our model instead of protein disease targets. I'll give you a dry bench validation, that is classification performance, and if time permits, a little bit on our latest work. So this is by no means an exhaustive list, but I wanted to share with you some of the methods that have been published in protein-protein interaction network-based approaches to finding candidate disease genes. The first one on top was done by Trey Eidecker's lab back in 2007, published in MSB. And here they were working in a model of human human breast cancer. And what they did is they obtained microarrays, transcriptomic profiles, from the public sector that had been detailed on experiments performed in human breast tissue between tumors and matched controls. They took those expression values and they painted them onto a human protein interaction network, and then by a greedy search, traversed the entire global interactome looking for small subnetworks that would differentiate between tumor and control. Having found that differential activity in those small subnetworks, they then used them as features to train a classifier, which in a cross-validation setting was a more accurate predictor of breast cancer metastasis than traditional single gene approaches. Similarly, Venunu and Sharan used causal disease genes, that is disease genes known to have a role in a variety of diseases. They combined these with PPI interactome confidence scores and once again did a global search of a human protein interaction network and produced a list of rank ordered list of causal disease genes. Many genes which came out ranked high, that showed high rank of the genes that were in their seed, but also they were able to infer new genes and also infer new protein complexes in the disease I listed here. By a similar approach, Kohler in 2007 showed that you could take genes discovered by linkage analysis and with a seeded random walk go through an entire global PPI and again produce a prioritized gene list, which were quite useful to infer positional cloning projects. Okay? So a number of things to point out about these studies is that while they all showed varying success at finding new candidate disease genes, they all are seeded with a genomic-based approach. In the case of Eidecker, he used expression profiling, and in the case of the other two, they used causal disease genes and or genes found by GWAS study, mutated genes or genes found by GWAS study. Okay? So we got to wondering, well, what would happen if we seeded an approach like this with proteomic disease targets as opposed to genomically derived disease targets? So this is what we did. And our model is basically described here. We started with 24 samples taken from colorectal biopsies, 12 late-stage tumor biopsies with matched controls in patients diagnosed with late-stage colorectal cancer. We separated those by 2D page. We looked for spots which were up greater than twofold and were significant on the gels. We excised those from the gels robotically, sequenced them by LC-MS/MS, and this ended up with 72 targets, highly significant for the colorectal phenotype. Okay, we took those disease targets and used them to seed a random walk of a human protein interaction network, looking for small subnetworks that would be topologically significant with respect to all of the targets and what I'm going to call here our seed. Okay? Now this is kind of how our computational model works. We basically take all of these seed targets, map them to the interactome, and then we systematically go through each node in the global protein-protein interaction network, looking, basically making an assignment for each node, and we assign its status. And we assign its status in one of three ways. Every protein in the interaction network either becomes an interactor, that is a protein which directly interacts with one or more of our seed targets, or it becomes a crosstalker. And a crosstalker is a node in the protein interaction network which is significant with respect to network crosstalk to all of the seeds in our disease target. Okay? Or, of course, there are going to be many, many nodes which are neither. So once we accumulate those small subnetworks, we can basically reach back into the interactome once our model is complete. And for each one of our disease targets, we can pull it back out of the interactome, and out with it will come either a small subnetwork of interactors or a small subnetwork of crosstalkers. Okay? Once we've assembled all these candidate subnetworks, we can then score them in the method similar to what Trey Eidecker did, what I showed you on the previous slide. We're going to score them for differential dysregulation between control and tumor using the measure of mutual information based on microarray profiles also obtained in colorectal cancer tissue. Okay? And these networks then, most importantly, are going to be used to drive in silico validation via classification or in vitro validation by a method that I'm going to show you in a moment. So here is the model data we used for our protein interaction data network. We used HPRD. I believe this was a version 6 copy. It encoded 9,317 proteins exhibiting at least one interaction. One of the proteomic data sets we used was one I just described to you, obtained in our lab, 72 targets, 60 of which mapped to HPRD. Another publicly available proteomic set of seeds or disease targets was produced in the Richard Caprioli's lab by David Friedman, who was then a postdoc in his lab. There they found 55 targets significant for colorectal cancer, 37 of which mapped to HPRD. And a little later I'll share with you another seed we used to compare this to a genomic-driven approach. Here these were 59 highly mutated genes found significantly mutated in human colorectal tissues, published in a landmark science paper in 2006. For those of you familiar with this area, these are the so-called CAN genes in human colorectal cancer. 42 of those mapped to HPRD. For scoring our subnetworks, we downloaded two microarray data sets from the Gene Expression Omnibus. One of those was done on an AFI chip, 32 tumor samples with matched controls. Another was done on Illumina, 48 experiments, 24 tumor biopsies with matched controls. Okay, and here's what the data looked like. This is one of the selected results. This is using the seed obtained in our lab, the proteomic targets, scored with the AFI array. Let me orient you to the graph a little bit. Here is our measure of coordinate dysregulation, mutual information, as I mentioned to you before. Here is the subnetwork size on the x-axis. The blue line represents the mean coordinate dysregulation of a set of random subnetworks of equivalent size and of equivalent topology. Okay? The vertical lines represent one standard deviation away from the mean. So we plotted only those significant subnetwork crosstalkers, which were significant. That is everything above the standard deviation line here. Those are denoted in red. And then we also plotted these significant interactor networks, which are shown by the green squares. The labels indicate the name of the proteomic seed that actually condensed that network by our network cross model. Okay? Basically, what you can see from this is that most of the seeds did not condense a significant subnetwork. But a number of them were quite high in terms of coordinate dysregulation. And in a few slides, I'm going to talk a little bit about this one. This is an example using the seed produced in the Friedman lab. Again, we see a similar number of crosstalkers showing up as significant by the measure of coordinate dysregulation. In nearly all cases, the crosstalkers were more significant than the companion interactor subnetwork. And this was something we expected, but it was not always a guarantee, depending on what microarray we used to score. So this is some indication that we are finding things that are significant. Here is a summary slide. This is the NIBI seed I showed you, scored by the two microarrays. This is the data for Friedman. In general, this is just a summary of what I've already told you. Most of our disease targets did not nucleate a significant subnetwork by our measure. And there were a similar number of interactors and a similar number of crosstalkers across data sets, indicating some robustness of the model across disparate seed types and across the network cross model in the implemented in HPRD. So I apologize, this slide didn't render as well as I would have wanted it to. What we did is we took all of the genes and all of the subnetworks that were significant and mapped them back to the interactome just to play out and see what they look like with respect to topology. And again, it's difficult to see. You might have to take my word for it. I think the paper illustrates this better. But the orange nodes are the proteomic disease targets. The black nodes are the crosstalkers, and white nodes are interactors. I think what this shows is what our hypothesis sort of suggested is that proteomic seeds are not distributed randomly throughout the global interaction network, but they are in fact tightly clustered. And this has been shown by any number of papers that disease genes in cancer, diabetes, and a number of other human diseases are not stochastically distributed throughout the interactome, but actually tend to cluster. So this is something we expected to see. Now, I told you, I hope I did, that the whole motivation for this type of approach is to drive validation projects. This is because wet bench validation projects are time-consuming and they're expensive, and it is very common that in silico methods produce a lot of significant results, and they can't possibly all be validated, so we need to rank order them, and that's what we did. I showed you a couple slides ago the TCP1 subnetwork, which was condensed. TCP1 is the T-complex protein. It is a heterooligomeric protein with two stacked subunits, with eight subunits apiece. Some of those subunits are shown here as the CCT proteins, 4, 5, and 7. They all showed up as crosstalkers in this network, and there are a number of other proteins around here. So we became interested in this network for a couple reasons. The reason it showed up significant by this analysis, but in addition, earlier work we had done in a non-crosstalk network model, former work which we published in Molecular and Cellular Proteomics in 2009, several of the subunits of this complex also came up as significant, as did a protein called PLK1, which is a polo-like kinase required for proper mitotic spindle assembly in most human cells. This is a protein which is known to be overexpressed in colorectal tumors. It is known to be overactive in colorectal tumors. It is thought to be a prognostic biomarker in colorectal tumors. And so we became interested in this protein as well. So in a separate cohort, independent samples not used in the proteomic screen, we wanted to validate the activity of this small network that I showed you on the previous slide. And so that's what we did by Western blot. In a separate cohort of samples labeled as normal tumor, normal tumor, normal tumor here. This is the Western blot data for select targets that appeared in that network. And as we expected, most of the targets at the level of protein are up over twofold, some as great as ninefold or even greater than tenfold in some of the patients. And this is what our model predicted, and this is what we expected. So we had thought that this would be overactive with respect to the tumor, and this is in fact what we found. PLK1 is up over 3 to 6 fold, something we didn't expect, and after publishing this study, we started doing a bigger literature search on this and found that PLK1 is now an inhibitor in phase trials for most solid tumors by Ancova Therapeutics. At the level of the message, what we did is took the mean fold change for the microarray data at the level of the message and plotted those, and as I think you can see, there's a very modest increase, if at all, in any of these proteins at the level of the message, suggesting that by just a genetic approach or just an expression array approach, these genes would likely have gone unnoticed. Now, earlier I told you, actually, the reviewers wanted us to compare this to a genetic-driven approach, so we went and said, okay, we'll take the genes most highly mutated in colorectal cancer and use those as a seed for our approach. And this is what we found. You already have seen these graphs before. We did this for both arrays, scored the subnetworks with both arrays. That's what's shown here. And there's a couple interesting things about this slide. Number one, the number of crosstalkers or networks at all, there were no interactors which showed up as significant, number one, when scored on the AFI array. There were only 4 crosstalkers which showed up as significant. They were generally not as high in terms of their coordinate dysregulation as the proteomic subnetworks. As sort of a positive control, the top scoring subnetwork was APC. APC is widely held to be the gatekeeper gene in the pathogenesis of colorectal cancer, so we were happy to see that one pop out. But strikingly, every single crosstalker subnetwork that appeared by scoring by the AFI array appeared by scoring on the Illumina array, suggesting again the robustness of our scoring method across different microarrays. In a cross-validation approach, we use the subnetworks as features to train an SVM-based classifier to classify tumor versus control. We did this in a cross-validation approach. That is, we trained on one microarray and we tested on another. And here are the results. So for the proteomic crosstalkers, I think you can see that, well, the first thing to notice about this slide is that the cancer driver genes, their crosstalkers, performed quite well in classification. This is the number of subnetwork features. This is the F measure, precision times recall. The CRC driver genes actually performed quite well, those subnetworks that were nucleated by the genomic approach, as we expect they should, because the seed enjoys genome-wide coverage, whereas proteomic profiling, we cannot profile the entire proteome for all proteins up and down in the cancer. So that was not unexpected. However, what was somewhat unexpected is that the proteomic crosstalkers, regardless of which array you look at, actually performed better for 3 or fewer subfeatures. Fewer features. Now, this is important because with small subnetwork, with small cohorts of data like we're working with here, it is important that we have a small number of features, otherwise we run the risk of overtraining the network. So this is actually a desirable feature. The purple line is what we found when we took a traditional approach. We rank ordered the genes on the microarray and used them to train the classifier, and you can see their performance is significantly less better than any of the network-based approaches. Okay, so in summary, how am I doing on time? In summary, I think what I've shown you is that proteomic targets, significant for a complex disease phenotype, are useful for scoring subnetworks for discriminating disease phenotype. The candidate subnetworks implicated in a disease, these provide a practical basis for mechanistic follow-up for validation and for the role in disease. We found that the proteomic crosstalk subnetworks were strong classifiers of the tumor phenotype and an in silico validation actually superior to the genetic approach. And the overall systems biology approach provides for a nice framework. We are actually coding up these methods, and we'll have them available for wider use on our lab's website probably within 6 months for those of you who are interested. Okay, I just want to end by saying that we are, colleagues of my lab are hosting a chair session at the next PacBio conference. This will be held in January on the Big Island. You can all imagine yourselves sitting on the beach. The session will be focusing on integrative omics for translational science, and we have a call for papers out. So for those of you interested in this area, please consider submitting a paper. I noticed that the expiration date has passed, but if you mail Gherkin in the lab, I'm sure he will still consider your paper. Okay. So with that, I will make my acknowledgments. I want to thank Mark Chance, my mentor, Salim Chowdhury for help with the classification experiments, Mehmet Koyaturk for many, many fruitful conversations, the Case Comprehensive Cancer Center for providing us the disease tissues. The funding comes from these agencies, and I would really like to thank the ISB for the travel fellowship and for the opportunity to present. So I think I'm out of time, and I'm not going to be able to present future work. With that, I will say the moral is, when you're looking for disease culprits, make sure you're in the right neighborhood. So I thank you for your attention.
Good time for questions? And I have one. You showed the overlap of all the experiments, and the overlap was zero in all these experimental experiments. And we see that very often now when you compare experiments. Can you comment on that? Is that scary, or do we measure?
So the question is, when I showed the Venn diagram of our model data, there was no overlap of the targets amongst the mutated genes and any of the disease targets that we found by proteomic profiling. Now, this is something that's not unexpected because, well, number one, for two reasons. By proteomic profiling, we don't enjoy whole proteome coverage. That is, we can't scan the whole proteome to look for prognostic targets. But the second is that in cancer, it is frequently the case that genes which are thought to be drivers of cancer are not overexpressed, and so they do not show up as differentially expressed either at the level of the message and sometimes frequently at the level of protein. The reason they're thought to be driver genes at the level of the proteome is because they're differentially active, not so much that they're differentially expressed. So that was actually not a surprise.
Okay. Thank you again.
Thank you.
There are no more questions.
Do I have any access time? I actually wasn't watching it.
You were just 1 minute over.
Okay. Perfect.